Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, it was our fault. We made a mistake. Spider said it was clear. I wasn't clear, and, you know, I didn't want to tear my car up, tear his car up either. I respect everybody, and I demand respect. And, you know, I apologized to the guy when he came over the car, explained to him what happened, and then he took it to another level when he started calling me an idiot and whatever else. And I don't appreciate that. I'm not going to take it. I told him how I felt. I called him out. He didn't show. You know, so, you know, I'm good with it if he's good with it, but I'm not going to be disrespected by no means.
Yeah, I guess I had a dinner date at Applebee's last night that I didn't find out until it was too late. It's a shame. Love their riblets and boneless wings, but...
Folks, welcome back to Meet Me at iHopplebee's. That's right, it's Meet Me at iHopplebee's now because we are at the IHOP Applebee's test kitchen based outside of somewhere hidden in Indiana. Yeah. They're coming soon to your town. Yeah, you didn't know about IHOP and Applebee's.
We're literally inside the building. They're definitely not open yet. So we're sitting around a can of Vienna sausages. True Love couldn't make it. She is alive. She did have her surgery. She's feeling okay. She wanted to send her regards to everybody. She's got a brand new mouth. She's going to sound different when she comes back. It's going to be a little bit more like Reba McEntire from her show in the 80s or the 90s. She's looking forward to that.
But it's Brian and Rob, as always. But yes. As mentioned last week, our returning guest is Jay Pennell from Racing America. And we're here to talk some racing, folks. So how are we all doing this week?
Very good. And thanks for coming on, Jay.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And it's always good to be here talking with you guys. And glad... True Love's doing better, and hopefully she's on the mend and back at some racetracks pretty soon. But glad to be here and glad to talk some racing with y'all.
Hell yeah, buddy.
Yeah, so we're fresh off the Phoenix weekend, the IndyCar first race, which I didn't even know the first IndyCar race was happening this weekend. I didn't see a second of it, but I'm sure, Rob, maybe you caught a little bit of it. And there's probably some other shit going on this weekend.
It lined up with the Worcester St. Patrick's Day parade, so I kind of had it open on my phone in between drinking with strangers out on the sidewalk and, just doing that thing. Joseph Newgarden won 5-second win. It was a fine race. IndyCar, of course, doing a great job of not promoting anything but the 500 as usual.
We might as well get into this real quick since we're already on the subject. In addition to this IndyCar race this weekend, also there was some news from the Andretti camp, and not just the Andretti camp. They weren't the only ones criticizing the Penske's, but there's a little bit of backlash. Yeah, a little bit of backlash against Roger Penske and the way he's handling IndyCar now, and there definitely seem to be some teams that want some more investment in the sport. I don't know what to say about the Andretti guys. After their issues with F1, you know, there's rumors of them coming back to NASCAR. Obviously, they have IndyCar involvement. I'm personally always a fan of people who speak up and say what they want to say about issues in the sport. So whether or not you agree with what Michael says, it's certainly interesting to hear him come out and say that type of stuff. He's not the only one. He's just the biggest name that's come out and talked about it, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that series is in a kind of a crucial spot, right? They want to grow, you know, their brand and their racing. I mean, the racing is exciting. They do have a 100%. Lot of different forms of racing. My time at Motorsport Games, you know, obviously we were working on the IndyCar game, which fell apart, you know, dramatically and wonderfully, but during my time working on that, I was able to go to the Long Beach Grand Prix, the Indy 500 in 2022, get to know some of these IndyCar folks. And we had lots of meetings with Penske Entertainment and, you know, the Jonathan Gibsons of the world and the Roger Penskes of the world. And, you know, they definitely have a vision of how that sport wants to be run, how they want that sport to be run. But when you have people like, you know, Michael and Mario Andretti who are involved and, you know, Zach Brown from, the McLaren team, there's a lot of egos and there's a lot of people who think they have good ideas about the direction of the sport.
Yeah.
One of the biggest things they relayed to us while we were trying to make this game was, they want to promote everything. They want to use the Indy 500 to promote the rest of the series. And it seems like getting to that point has always been their struggle, and it seems like it still is their struggle. Yeah. You know, they've got some great drivers, some great personalities. They hit some really awesome racetracks. You know, and it seems like they're just kind of stuck in this spot and need something to get them back in the forefront. You know, I think with the lack, you know, I think I saw some stats today about, you know, the F1 viewership this weekend being down almost 40%.
Yeah.
You know, they could capitalize.
They've been on the decline all year, both Netflix and the races. Like, you know,
exactly.
who can blame them? I mean, regardless of all the off-track drama that's happening, when the product on the track is as predictable as it's been, I mean, yeah. Who the hell wants to watch that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think IndyCar has an opportunity to capitalize that as, you know, the America's, you know, premier open wheel style racing. Let's not say, you know, obviously I'm a big open wheel dirt fan, but I would argue there's some bigger dirt series out there than them. But, you know, when it comes to that style of IndyCar, you know, racing, I think they have an opportunity. It's just getting all their ducks in a row and figuring out how the best way to promote that. Obviously, video game would have been a good way, but, you know, we kind of screwed the pooch on that.
The whole thing is just so damn familiar. I feel like the entirety of me watching IndyCar, CART, IRL, whatever the fuck it's been, this has always been the case. So it's more of the same chirping, and you know, I don't necessarily disagree with Michael Andretti. And again, for me personally, I'm a big IndyCar fan. I put it up there with NASCAR. I try and watch as many races as possible. But since short track racing is so accessible for me now, I completely forgot that the St. Petersburg was happening up until like Saturday. We didn't even mention it on the show last week, and usually I'll make a big deal about it, but no, I completely fucking forgot, because I was more focused on the World of Outlaws raining out. So that should tell you something, you know?
And I gotta give a shout out. Yep. I gotta give a shout out to my buddy Luke Mason. He's a race engineer for Joseph Newgarden. So, you know, they won the 500 last year, and obviously they won this past weekend. So he was a race engineer for Daniel Hemric one of the years we worked on the Xfinity series at Richard Childress. So it's always cool to see an old friend get some success and get to celebrate victory lane.
Hell yeah. Penske definitely having a hell of a year right now. They're on top of the IMSA points. They won the Rolex. They just won in St. Pete. They're, Ryan Blaney is leading the points in the Cup Series. They're looking pretty good right now.
Which is, I guess, the crazy thing when you factor all that stuff in, and then we're also talking about Roger being in charge of this entire series and how he's maybe kind of sort of dropping the ball a little bit. It's like, man, you're for a guy who's, you know, I don't know if he's a billionaire. If he's not a billionaire, he's got to be close. He's got
this,
you know, nationwide business and all these races. And it's like, yeah, well, I have all the respect in the world for you taking control of Indy and IndyCar in general. It's like, yeah, maybe you are spreading yourself a bit thin. And yeah, like the if anything, you know, we talk about the F1 and versus NASCAR battle all the time, but I think really what could be more relevant is IndyCar versus F1, because, you know, I think if you're one of those F1 fans
in the US anyway, for sure.
Just based on the similarities of the cars and the fact that, you know, yes, they race on ovals, but they also race on way more road courses than NASCAR, even though NASCAR races on plenty of road courses now.
Yeah.
I feel like making that leap over would be more easier for a lot of those fans, but, you know, compared to NASCAR, IndyCar just does not have that foothold in the U.S. like it used to. And it would be nice, even though I've never been the biggest IndyCar fan. I have a ton of respect for it, and I would love to see it gain more prominence, at least more prominence than F1 in the U.S. because I think it should have that.
I just think it's tough for them, because that's always been the question, is like, what is IndyCar racing? Like, what does it even fucking mean? Like, everyone knows what the 500 is. It is the most prestigious race in the world, maybe besides Le Mans, right? Yeah. I don't think even like it eclipses Daytona for me. I know that's sacrilege to a lot of listeners on the show here, but
it's still the oldest race.
It's been around a long time. NASCAR, when they go to Indianapolis, it is second tier in comparison to the big show there. Even when Formula One went there, it was the same way, but that's all they have. And that's always been the question of how do you tie this all together? And, you know, the split in the 90s, there was a lot of discussion about that. You know, Tony George feeling it needed to have more of a short track, ladder leading into it like it did back in the 70s, and not be Formula One light, which was what CART was kind of leaning towards. Yep. And we're still there, you know, and I don't know if there really is a way to fix that, to be perfectly honest.
I will say, you know, I think it's impressive that IndyCar has, and maybe we're not seeing this a lot because we're so focused on, you know, what we do here in the States, but I got a release from them, you know, earlier this month where, you know, their global coverage of IndyCar reaches 140 different countries. right? And I'm sure NASCAR has that as well. But, you know, dedicated coverage of your sport outside of the borders, I think is huge, right? I mean, I know NASCAR has international broadcasts. They have an international series. But I don't think their focus is on those items, right? You know, the focus is getting more people here in America to tune in, you know, United States, Canada, Mexico. I think IndyCar is looking broader than just beyond our borders, you know, broader than our borders. And I think their diverse background of drivers helps with that, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So I think that is an advantage for them, especially, like you said, when it comes to these F1 fans who are just bored out of their mind.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But yeah. With all that said, we didn't watch this race, but we did watch.
No, we didn't.
But Phoenix did happen this weekend, and I don't know how much we all watched collectively, but I caught most of what happened, both with ARCA and, you know, the NASCAR races. So did you guys watch ARCA? Where do we want to start with Phoenix?
I watched a little of the ARCA race, 43 cars there, which is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where it ended for me. A lot of wrecks, a lot of goofy shit. You know, I had a buddy over while it was on TV, and we kind of only look up when something funny happened. I don't even know who won it. Was it William Sawalish? Did he win that race?
Yes, because there was
I believe so.
It was. I will say, even though there were a bunch of wrecks, there was, and I'm trying to remember who Sawalish was racing with, but there was some good racing for the lead towards the end before
there was,
weather caught up. But it was an interesting race. Both.
Yeah,
Tony
how about Brenninger, a rain? That's what it was. It was a fucking rain delay that brought the race in Phoenix of all places. So,
but
I have been to Phoenix when it's raining. It's not fun. Yeah.
But you know, aside from actually some pretty decent racing up front, we had both Tony Brenninger and, remind me of her name, there was another 19-year-old girl who was running in the top five, and it was her first race.
Isabella Robusto.
That's
it,
yes.
Yeah. Very cool to see. You know, it was cool. Like, I'm good. It's very nice to see, because I know all those, you know, the women in the Daytona race, they all wrecked out at once. So it's good to see two of them running up front for a good portion of the race.
Yep.
I think that was very positive. And it's definitely not nearly as embarrassing as the ARCA Daytona race, but it is still ARCA, so there's ARCA braking and all that other shit happening.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's cool to see Isabel up there. You know, I don't think I realized this until watching this race that I used to watch Isabel race Legends cars at Charlotte Motor Speedway.
Okay.
You know, when they do like the summer shootout series, I think she used to run like a tie-dye car, and I remember getting her hero card for my daughter when we went. But, you know, one of the things I do think is really good about this weekend's race was, you know, the guy that William had to beat was Gio Ruggiero. And
right, yeah.
I mean, it's great to see Gio in a car, in an ARCA car that's out there performing really well. I think this kid's got a lot of talent, even though he's kind of a dick to me at the Snowball Derby. But, you know, he's definitely got a heavy right foot and knows what to do with a car. So
he's very good.
It was cool to see.
Yeah, definitely nice to see a lot of these sort of Southeast, Mid-Atlantic late model guys showing up in ARCA and making waves.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep. And moving on to Saturday, it was a Busch race, Xfinity race. I'm still going to call it a Busch race. Whatever.
Yeah.
I'm looking up here. I can't even remember who won. Oh, Chandler Smith won.
Chandler Smith, after wrecking his teammate and causing a massive crash on the backstretch.
Yeah, that was funny.
Yep.
Yeah.
And once again,
Sam Mayer got out and put his hands up and like almost like he won. Like, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
there was at one point a red flag for a pretty big wreck. I know John Hunter was involved in it and a bunch of other people. Yeah, Sheldon Creed, once again, did not get the job done, finishing third. He got passed by Jesse Love, which was a bummer.
Yeah. I keep rooting for the wrong car in that situation. My brain still associates the two with Sheldon, so I'll get real excited when Jesse Love does something, and then I'm just very disappointed once I realize my mistake.
I will forever cheer for the two and the 21. You know, they both have a special place in my heart.
Yes,
I know,
you have a much closer tie to that team than any of us ever will.
Yeah,
but
I've been to the museum once. That's the extent of my
right.
of my loyalty right there. But
I will say Sheldon definitely needs to get it done, even though he's been running up front all season. He needs to get a fucking win under his belt, so hopefully it's coming soon. I know, but it needs to happen. It's time, man. He's got to get it done.
Sheldon, if you're listening, just win. Like, if you consider just winning, you know, fuck.
Man, I'll tell you, it is much. I know we can all sit here and say that, and like we all know it's much more difficult to actually go out there and do that. But as somebody who worked on a team who finished, I think, second 7 times 1 year, it just, you just get to the point where you're like, man, what the hell is it going to take for us to break through and get this done?
For those of you who don't know, Jay worked with Daniel Hemrick, who is Mr. Second Place in the Xfinity series.
Yeah. For 3 years.
For 3 years.
Yeah, we had a lot of near wins and never won. So
yeah, well, you got the championship. You weren't there at that point, I don't think.
I was at Motorsport Games, and I think that was with Gibbs. So yeah. I did get to go out on the track and give him a hug and celebrate and tell him, you know, I knew this was always going to come. So
yeah, I imagine that's a very frustrating garage to be in, and a shop to be in when that's happening.
It is, because everybody's, you know, and I'm sure this is what, you know, Sheldon's going through too, right? You know, you're doing all the things you need to do. You're working as hard as you can. You're working as hard as everybody around you. And there's just little things that come up each and every weekend that keep preventing you. So you got to get over that, and you got to just keep your nose to the grindstone, and those wins will come.
Yeah, for sure.
But one person that you did spend some time in victory lane with in your RCR days was Austin Dillon, who on Sunday, yet again, was caught up in yet another wreck. So,
yeah.
Bad time.
Since Daytona, I've been saying that there's a spirit out there telling Pop to get that kid out of that fucking car. And yet again, it's happening. So
it's time for the Austin Hill era to begin.
I saw something with him, with Austin Dillon, I think last week or the week before, where he was talking about taking up pickleball as his retirement plan. So,
he's ready.
He's ready. No, I think Austin has a future running RCR.
For sure, 100%.
You know, him and the group that he has around him, that has been around him for a very long time. You know, obviously Mike Dillon's heavily involved in this as well. But I think over the next few years, you'll start seeing that. And, whether he does that behind the wheel and tries to make that work, I don't think that's going to work, because it's obviously not working right now.
Yeah.
Especially with the way that 8 car is running. So,
yes,
you know, I mean, and the pit crew is doing everything they can to kind of screw the 8 car. So, even though he's been able to overcome that and have these, you know, good runs, that should translate to the 3 car, you know. And I have a lot of friends who work on that car, from the car chief to the tire guys to pit crew guys to, you know, engineers, and they're all really good people and really smart people, and they know how to win races. So there's obviously something lacking over there. We'll let everybody else figure out what that is.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Kyle didn't have the best weekend either, but I mean, regardless. So Phoenix happened, and you know, for all the talk of the new short track package, drivers didn't seem to be super impressed with it. But the race Sunday, you know,
it was fine.
Fans didn't give it the best response. There was a lot of different feedback all over the place. It wasn't awful. You know, there was passing all over the place, and obviously Toyota was completely in charge of Sunday.
I think if anyone thought that this taking the diffuser off and changing the spoiler up a little bit was gonna have any drastic effect on the racing, just hasn't been watching races at Phoenix for the past like 65 years. It's just, it is what it is. Loudon race is kind of the same way. These are GT cars. You mix those things together, a kind of big flat mile oval with GT cars, and you know, pretty wide tires. And again, credit to Goodyear, I think whatever they brought definitely helped the show a lot, and it kind of opened the strategy up a little bit, which is what made that race.
And then strategy is 100% what made that race.
And then you got to see Christopher Bell lay an ass whooping on everybody, which again, like, if you've been to Loudon in the past 3 or 4 years, especially since they started bringing the next gen car out, that's just what he does. There's nobody better than him in those situations. So
and I think he was in a position, you know, to potentially win the championship last year until that brake failure, you know? So, I think Christopher I think he flies under the radar so well. You know, I know, you know, a lot of our friends like to give him crap for being vanilla and khakis, you know, but I'll tell you, Christopher is a great guy. He is just the epitome of a racer.
Stupid talented man.
And just so good and so smart. And I love to see somebody like that who just doesn't care about the outside stuff. You know, you're not going to see Christopher on Twitter, you know, giving his opinion. He's not going to be on podcasts. I think he was on Dale Jr.'s podcast or something this week, but you know, he's not going to be hosting podcasts. He's not going to be doing this. He's not going to be doing that. He's going to focus on winning races and helping that race team win championships. And that pairing with Adam Stevens is great. I think Adam is one of the best crew chiefs in the sport. I think he's one of the smartest guys, and they've got a killer pit crew. That, you know, the pit crew on the 20 team was the team that won the pit crew challenge last year. They were they started the year with Ty Gibbs last year and then ended it with Christopher. But they've got a ton of experience there. Darrell Edwards on Jack, Michael Hicks changing tires. So I think that whole package is just killing it.
Pit stops in the low 8 second range. That's fucking insane. So
And consistently too. So, it's really impressive. I will say this weekend's race, I don't know if it was the time change, the package or the track, but I watched more of the back of my eyelids than I did the race. And, I see this as a, you know, I forget where it was. I think it was Atlanta last year where NASCAR talked about record number of lead changes or something. But when you're running side by side and they're shuffling back and forth and you're counting that as a lead change, it's not exactly
when they go 15 wide on a restart.
Exactly. Yeah. You're going to look at that every time there's a restart and you have 5-6 wide right after the start finish line. You have people all the way up at the wall and all the way, you know, 3 car lengths below the white line in the corners for the first 3 or 4 laps. That's super thrilling and exciting, but what happens when those cars come off the corner? They're all in the same spot, right?
Exactly.
You're not able to make these passes. You're not able to get runs on people. You know, obviously Christopher was able to do that in the end. I think he, in the last like 40 laps, he was like 20th or something.
It's definitely a testament to the setup.
Yeah, and I think that's a testament to the Toyotas and the adjustments that they were able to make throughout the race. But, I think it's a very Phoenix is not the best example for this. I think this weekend at Bristol is going to be good once we get to Richmond. But Richmond hasn't been putting on good races for the last God knows how many years.
I think Richmond is the big test for this. They're not running the new package at Bristol, I don't believe.
That's right, yeah.
I think they're still sticking with the original setup, which whatever, that's fine. Another thing I do want to point out again, like I was kind of bumming on this race while we were watching it. You know, I didn't have great expectations for it, but it's like it's just a damn shame that things are the way they are there. And I think everyone's really mostly upset about that, obviously because the championship is settled in this exact same fashion. I don't think anyone would really give a fuck if it was just the third race of the year or the fourth race of the year, whatever it is. You know,
no
one would care.
In saying that, though, there was some chatter this weekend, apparently from Jordan Bianchi, that maybe 2025 we might not see Phoenix as the last race of the year anymore, which...
Yeah, it sounds like Homestead might make a return, which is pretty cool.
I'd be totally fine with that. I mean, it's hard to argue Phoenix gets the attendance. They do a very good job promoting the race. It's a cool-looking facility. Everybody has great things to say about it, but unfortunately, if that's the race you're deciding the championship with... Hopefully you want to do it at a track that the racing itself is better.
Well, it's like opening up the most beautiful bar on earth. You know, you've got, it's incredible. The staff is awesome, but you're only serving 3-2 beer. You know, no one's going to come to that shit after a while. Maybe it's a nice room to sit in, but it's certainly not where you want to spend your time getting drunk. And that would be Homestead for me. And it sounds like that, if this does happen, again, there's no official rumblings of this and NASCAR has not even come close to acknowledging it, but the old rumor mill is certainly saying, I don't know if that's just people trying to will it into existence, but I would be in favor of a change back to Homestead, because I feel like that really does show off sort of the best of all worlds.
I think the best part there is NASCAR owns both tracks, right?
Exactly. So, it's not a huge
Not going to get, I'm sorry, as much as people want, like, you're not going to have Atlanta be the finale, right? You're not going to have any SMI track.
Yeah, Vegas is the other one I've talked about.
Yeah, well, there's no way. I guarantee you, there's no way NASCAR is going to end their season and have their biggest championship race at an SMI track. That's just not going to happen, especially with how much money that they have poured into these facilities over the last 10 years to fix them up and make them enhanced garages with more fan access and this and that. I think it'd be a cold day in hell when there's a season finale not at a NASCAR track, but I do think that the 25 schedule is going to look drastically different. You know, I think there's going to be a lot of changes. I think, you know, there's going to be shuffling of playoff races. This is just kind of my opinion. I haven't been to the racetrack since the Roval last year. So, you know, I'm not as close to it as I used to be, you know, on a week to week basis. But from everything that I've kind of been told and heard, you know, there's going to be some big changes there.
Chip. You heard it here first, folks. In this combination, this combination Applebee's IHOP that we're all sitting at right now.
Right.
Well, there's a lot of rumors about Los Angeles coming back into the into play here. Maybe a Dodger Stadium. I know a lot of people are kind of fixated on the Oval being the something they would do in there, but I think we're probably going to get a street race out of it. It seems to be the way more reasonable option. I mean, Dodger Stadium, apparently the footprint in the interior of the stadium is way smaller.
It's not like, you know, a half mile or what is it, 3/8 in the Coliseum. I feel like they could do a little bit smaller in there, but
to me, like a parking lot race, as much as it makes my skin crawl to say that, that's a much easier way to get this thing done and put a race in a market where they don't normally go. You know, there's no race in Southern California. They're not going to fucking Irwindale. They sold half their property anyway. They barely have room to fit what they do now at Irwindale, and that was always a pipe dream to begin with. So, again, it'd be cool to see another oval set up inside the stadium, but I feel like if NASCAR goes to California again, or Los Angeles area again, they're going to want it to be a points race. I just feel like that's makes the most sense for them, to give them a legitimate event. As cool as the Coliseum was, you know, it's still a, you know, it's a exhibition race. People want
to
see
it's expensive for them to put on too, right?
Exactly. You know?
So I think if they're going to do that, they're going to do that someplace where it's going to make more impact, right? So I've seen and heard rumblings of Mexico City, and to me that makes more sense, right? You combine it with the NASCAR Mexico series, you have these giant stadiums that, you know, can hold, you know, tens of thousands of people for soccer and everything like that,
right?
You know, and it's a lot easier to build a racetrack in a soccer stadium or a football stadium than it is a baseball stadium. So, I would hate to see a street crit. You know, to me, if you want to be in Southern California and have a points race, go race Long Beach with the IndyCar series. Do a doubleheader weekend. You already have a track that's set up.
Now
you already have fans coming to the racetrack.
Yeah, really.
You know, this is a track that has been proven to be capable of running race cars around it on a consistent basis.
Yeah, IMSA runs there too. Yeah, so.
And yeah, exactly. There's already that that NASCAR presence with IMSA there. And I'll tell you, I was there in 22 and the crowds were huge. It was a great weekend because you don't only have the IndyCar race there. You have the Stadium Series trucks. You've got sports cars that are running. You have Indy Light. There is so much going on that weekend. It was really kind of the first street race that I had been to. And, it was really, really impressive. And, you know, I think, that'd be a great place for them to do that.
I mean, even at CART's worst, like when Champ Car was about to fold and they went and ran Long Beach, and I think they had like, I forget what, the TV ratings were abysmal. It was under 100,000 or some crazy shit like that on Versus. And there are more people at the racetrack for the event than actually tuned in to watch it on cable. So that shows you how strong an event Long Beach is. I hadn't even thought about that. I'd always thought that maybe it was a space issue, and bringing in NASCAR would be a real pain in the ass because it could only be one of them if the Indy cars are there and IMSA's still there, and there's a lot of shit going on. So I'd love to see that. And that's probably the only occurrence where I wouldn't kind of roll my eyes at there being another street race added to the schedule. But it sounds like Los Angeles is definitely in the conversation as well. And I don't want too many more of these street races. I enjoyed Chicago. Don't get me wrong. It was fun as fuck. But I don't want any more of those. I'd watch supercars instead. You know?
Right.
I want to watch that.
I'll tell you, I was looking at a picture not terribly long ago that I took from Auto Club Speedway a couple years ago, and man, I just missed that track. That was such a badass track, and
it's so painful
the scenery
to see
around it,
it
was so cool, and I just hate that it's gone.
You know, and I don't know, maybe it's just me being a pessimist that's not going to come back, but. I don't know. I don't think we're going to see Fontana for a long time if we ever do again. So,
no.
They got to do something.
I mean, that property's worth more than the racetrack. So,
yeah, it is.
I mean, if they want to build a short track there, sort of like, what is it, the iRacing, that big iRacing super speedway they have on iRacing, yeah. You know, then more power to them. But I don't know. I think their priorities have shifted a little bit, especially with this car, too. So,
yeah, for sure.
I don't know. We'll see.
True. Rob, I got a note here about a North Wilkesboro test. I didn't hear a damn thing.
I just saw this on Instagram a couple hours before we started recording here. They tested some trucks there on the new service today, and it looks really fast, which is what happens when you repave a racetrack.
Cars race tomorrow.
Really? Awesome.
Yes. So let me see. I actually have an email on this.
Nice. There's a video on Instagram right now and Twitter of I don't know exactly how many truck teams are there, but they're out there doing single lap runs and just kind of like checking the surface out. I believe it's a tire test, but I'm not 100% certain on that. But there is cool video of cars ripping around the new surface, and like I said, it looks fast as fuck.
Let's see. It looks like William Byron will be there, Joey Logano, and Ty Gibbs, it looks like. We'll be doing the test Wednesday and Thursday.
Nice.
So no Fords? Oh, no, Joey Logano's
the Ford. Joey's the Ford.
Okay. Well, that's... Well, I guess we'll see how it goes. I don't see myself going to Wilkesboro this year, but I'll obviously be watching. And I would love for the racing to get better there, because that experience last year was so cool, and I hope it continues, but... I don't know, man. Like, it was cool to do it once, and they need to fix the racing there before, if they're going to keep going.
But just another example of these cars not working on short tracks, like actual pure short tracks, you know? There's nothing else to be said about that, really.
More power.
Yeah, other than that,
give it only four gears, right? Like, I mean...
Well, Larson was on the download today. Larson was saying that, and Danny also said this in his podcast, that there's no difference in budget.
No.
Yeah, you can bring 1,000 horsepower to Bristol if you wanted to. It would not be that big of a change, apparently, which is...
Denny talked, I don't know if you listened to the podcast, but he got very in-depth with all the motor stuff, and he even admitted himself. He's like, okay, it's probably not as simple as just, you know, adjusting the plate in the tapered space or whatever, but it's still not as difficult and not as financially burdensome as... NASCAR might make it seem to be. And
no, they can do it.
Yeah,
we know, you know, there's definitely behind the scenes stuff with Honda and you know, the manufacturers. Who the hell knows what's going to happen? But again, if NASCAR just gave them more horsepower, it would, at the very least, change. Not necessarily solve all the problems, but it would fix things a little.
Not to insinuate that NASCAR is operating from a fear based position, but you got to wonder if it would even help. And like, what's the point in doing this if it's not actually going to help the car? And now we just have a broken product completely that we actually can't fix.
I think the other thing is, too, you know, you also have to look at things going on behind the scenes, right? I don't think that.
Yeah.
I think the relationship between NASCAR and the teams is probably the worst it's been in my lifetime. So I don't think they're very receptive to suggestions that are coming from the teams right now.
No.
And so, you know, I think until they can get past some of the other things that they're working through, they're just going to continue to butt heads, and NASCAR is going to go down the direction that they want to. You know, kind of one of the changes I foresee coming up, I don't know if it'll be next year, but in the coming years, I think you'll see paddle shifters in the cars.
Yeah.
I don't think you'll see anybody using I think they'll get rid of the shifter. So I don't know. I think right now, I don't know that that NASCAR is the most receptive to listening to what the teams have to say, because there's so much other things going on between between those entities that, you know, I don't know that they're really working together on anything.
Yeah, I would. Your insider insight there aside, I agree 100%. Just they don't seem to like each other, so
no.
I would not be surprised to hear that that's the 100% truth right there.
And the clip that I saw from Denny's podcast was, you know, when he told Jared, I'll tell you exactly what I told Dustin Long, go ask Jim France, and that seems to be the response that we get a lot from Denny when it comes to things with NASCAR. So
yeah.
I think it's pretty clear the tensions there, but I think those tensions are leading to some of these issues where they're not able to work together, but hopefully they get all that put behind them.
Well, there's one thing we can all agree on. I can tell you what that is. It's that Four Loko is coming back to NASCAR.
Let's go.
That's right, baby.
So this isn't their first. It's not like they've been away for a long time. Like, I think they've sponsored. Yeah, I think they've already sponsored Alpha Prime at some point, though.
Yeah, they've worked with Alpha Prime several times now, but it's just so nice to see him come back. They're coming back with Ryan Ellis for Talladega.
Great dude, by the way.
It is the Jungle Juice flavor.
Ryan's such a good guy. It's great to see him get a sponsor like this and get these opportunities. Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah,
anytime I see a product I endorse out on the racetrack, it gets me excited. So,
While I respect Four Loko, I am one of the people that kind of fell off once they changed the formula. Again, this is a very long time ago they changed it, but the new stuff now, it's like, oh man, it's 14%.
You can't sell what they used to sell anymore, man. It's
I
think about 15 years ago I was in New Jersey back home visiting family or something, and we went to the exchange on the military base, and you could still buy the old Four Loko. That was a rip roaring night. I remember
stocked up in a warehouse somewhere.
I will say this, about 2015, I was moving, my roommate and I were kind of moving out of our one apartment and going our separate ways, and he had actually saved a couple of cans of original Four Loko, and he didn't want them, so I drank them, and it fermented wrong or something, because it didn't have the same effect that it did years prior. Because the last time I had a real Four Loko when they were still sold, I ended up, this was my birthday, granted, I ended up waking up on my couch with my girlfriend in my bed in the other room, and I pissed in my cat's litter box.
Nice.
And I had to take the top off the litter box and everything. And I was like, I don't even know how I did that. Like, why? Why was I? What happened? So that was my last.
Still not
good
the worst decision you could have made.
No. For sure.
I was a Sparks guy back in the day. I wish they would bring that back. But again, they're not doing that caffeine alcohol thing like that ever again. Sparks was a little more subdued, but yeah.
Yes, well, Sparks was they were the first ones to bring that formula to the market. And
they were.
Four Loko upped the ante quite a bit. And now to get that same effect, you have to pick your favorite energy drink and mix it up. But
yeah,
I'll tell you,
there'll be some. If they're drinking Four Loko in the Boulevard at Talladega, there's going to be some wild things going on that weekend.
Oh, they will.
I will not be there. I was trying to get down there for that's going to be the weekend before my 40th birthday. So I was going to rent an RV and go have a big old time down there like I usually do. But I'm going to a wedding in Miami Beach that weekend. So I'll have to reserve my Talladega party for the fall. But yeah, if they're having some fun with some Four Loko, it's going to be a time on the Boulevard. That's
for
sure.
That level of drinking is not something you typically want to bring to somebody else's wedding or any wedding in general. So
I should also say too, I feel like I've mentioned it. The other Four Loko NASCAR experience I had actually was on my first Daytona 500. And we brought Four Lokos into the track, me and my buddy Greg. And that was the race where I was so upset by Trevor Bayne winning that I threw an apple on the track afterwards.
Bad dog.
Why did I have an apple? Because I'm a healthy person. I bring fruit to the track as opposed to just snacks. But,
you bring apples to the track and you piss in the litter box.
Exactly.
Control chaos.
That's the Four Loko legacy. And
you can smoke
continues.
Weed out of an apple too eventually, so it's dual purpose.
There you go. Yeah. Or a Four Loko can.
Or Four Loko.
More positive news, and Rob, you're probably gonna have to help me with this guy because I don't know a shit about him. But we've got Connor Zilch.
Zilch.
So is he a short track guy? What is his deal? I see Trackhouse development driver.
He's a young dude who's currently mostly running in Trans Am, but he's kind of doing the thing that a lot of drivers are doing now and kind of dabbling here and there. I think you're going to see a lot of, I think Jay, you'll bat me up on this, is you're going to see a lot of drivers coming through Trans Am as part of the NASCAR development ladder. And this
100%.
Kid has been tearing it up in Trans Am. And I think his first race, Coda. Let me open the link here. He's also doing a few other oval races, Phoenix, Homestead, Kansas, Watkins Glen, excuse me. He'll be driving for Junior Motorsports in the 88 there, the old Star car. I think that's going to be something to watch because he's definitely very, very talented. And it's, again, Dale Jr. and the squad having a nice eye on picking talent.
Yeah, and well, I think a lot of this is, you know, part of Chevy's development program, right?
Correct, yep.
You know, Chevy's done a good job of going out there and finding these young kids, And whether they come from, you know, late models, pros, supers, you know, whatever it is, even the dirt stuff, you know, they're going out there finding these young guys, not only giving them opportunities, but they're, you know, at the Chevy facility at Hendrick Motorsports, right, training with Josh Wise, and, you know, they're debriefing with these Cup guys. They're very much involved in a lot of the things that are going on with the Chevrolet program. You know, like you said, Rob, the Trans Am stuff is huge to the Chevy program. There's a lot of folks who are down there running. I know they were, I forget where they were not terribly long ago. Was it Sebring?
Didn't Connor come all the way from the back to win?
I believe he did. Yeah.
At Sebring, which is a tough ass racetrack.
And what I like about what they're doing with him in this role with JRM are the type of tracks that he's going to, right? You have four very different tracks, from Watkins Glen to Kansas to Homestead to Phoenix. Those are all four very different tracks.
Yes.
And I think it's really going to test his skills. And it's great to see, Junior giving back to these guys, right? You know, we've got Connor Zilich in the car, you know, Bubba Pollard's got a ride.
Yes.
We got, you know, Butterbean Queen, Brendan Queen's, you know, getting rides. So it's cool to see, these guys coming up the ranks, and getting these opportunities. Now they just have to make the most of them. But like I said, that Chevy involvement, with there's a lot of investment going into these kids, on and off the racetrack, to make sure that not only are they running well when they're behind the wheel of the car, but they're training, they're eating well, all of those things that a lot of people don't even think about. But yeah.
Well, another thing about Connor running both Phoenix and Homestead, to me, maybe I'm just reading too deeply into the tea leaves here. Those are both championship tracks. You know, Phoenix is where we settle it now. Homestead is where we've gone before. We might go back to. If you're going to get somebody ready to bring up to that level soon, those are good places to start getting their feet wet, or the places where the titles are actually decided. So.
And I actually, funny enough that we're talking about this now, on the way down here, I was catching up on some podcasts I haven't listened to in a while, and I finally listened to the Dinner with Racers episode with Ron Fellows, and. Yeah. You know, it's funny you mentioned Junior and Chevy and the Trans Am series. And, you know, aside from Ron Fellows having experience he did in both Cup and Xfinity back then, you know, he talked about how Dale wanted him to eventually drive for DEI full time. Yep. And, you know, I think it's funny that we're talking about Connor now, and this conversation probably was happening 20 years ago with Fellows, and how things could have been different, say, if Dale, because you know, DEI put Ron in that car years later after Dale had died because of Ron's relationship with Dale.
Right.
But, you know, Ron talked about how literally weeks before Dale died, they were talking about putting him in a car full time, and who knows what could have happened had that actually come to fruition. And now 20 years later, things are happening again that way.
Well, didn't they run the 24 together?
They did. Yeah.
Well, they ran. Yeah. They were both Chevy teams. Fellows wasn't in that car with the Earnhardts. They were two separate cars.
They were two separate cars.
That was the other thing I talked about, how when Dale came over, because Fellows was driving the three car at the time, and Earnhardt actually was like willing to not drive the three, but it's, you know, the analogy that Ron made was like, well, if Wayne Gretzky comes over to your hockey team, you're not going to, if you're running the 99, you're not going to still run the 99.
Exactly.
Yeah. Gretzky, of course, be like 99B. Yes. Do some short track shit there.
Who was the other guy in the Earnhardt car?
Oh man.
I can't remember anymore.
Let me see.
We have the internet here, folks. It's true.
Right.
But yeah, it'll be cool to see Connor. And like I said, I think you're going to see a lot more of this. So, and again, Trans Am Racing is really cool. It is road racing. It has a deep heritage, and it's kind of got buried by a lot of other stuff like IMSA, which is a shame because Trans Am Racing in the 80s was incredible. And it's kind of maintained that quality of racing all the way through. And I think we're going to start seeing a lot of people come through. So maybe pay attention to that. It's on CBS, I believe.
I think so.
Yeah.
I will say, I got to give a shout out to Matt Tift. Matt Tift getting back behind the wheel of a Trans Am car.
Yep, that's right.
You know, obviously he left Live Fast in that whole deal last year. And, you know, kind of let me know that he was working on some things behind the wheel. So, but he's running that Trans Am stuff. And
He's back up in Ohio now too, which is
yep.
a little odd because we're back in the same town. I've only had a couple interactions with him, but who knows? I'm sure I'll probably make it out to Mid-Ohio.
You guys go to Skyline Chili together?
Oh,
there's
God.
No Skylines in Cleveland, bud. There's no Skylines. They're all like Columbus and South, I feel like.
Right.
We used to have a few Skylines, but they all started to shit the bed during COVID, unfortunately.
Oh, sort of like what happens when you eat Skyline chili.
Exactly.
I am a Skyline guy after from moving to Cleveland, and it's good stuff. Like,
this is why
I'm,
you use
I'm
the litter box, isn't it?
It is not good stuff.
Stop. No. Get out of here. Get out of here. It's good.
Also, for all my Paul Menard fans out there, Paul Menard fans, he races in Trans Am all the time. He's a regular.
Yes, he does. Yeah.
So if you like Paul Menard, you can see him race anytime Trans Am races, or most of the time, I think.
Yeah.
Big Paul Menard guy here. Yeah. I also worked with Paul for, God, maybe two or three seasons. If you don't think that guy has a personality, just hang out with him for a little bit. He is probably one of the funniest people in the sport.
He does seem like one of those guys that's probably actually cool off the track, and he's such a kind of like Kenseth too. Like Kenseth is a similar way.
Midwest, whatever that is, the sarcasm.
But. Speaking of toilet talk, I think that covers most of the NASCAR news of the week, but there was some short track septic stuff this weekend. I know there were some suspensions for some tire issues.
That's right. At the beginning of the year, this is the short track septic tank brought to you by Zen unofficially. I just popped a six right now, and we're going to see where that takes me. But earlier this year, pretty much every major sanctioning body, World Racing Group, which is, of course, World of Outlaws, and the Lucas Oil guys, and they all came out with a very stern tire policy for this year. If you're caught soaking, doing any sort of manipulation to tires at all, you're out. We're throwing you out. There's varying levels of punishment, and this is a lot of these policies actually extend across series. In fact, the Lucas Oil policy includes infractions from World of Outlaw or Dirt Car events, which is what we're about to get to, because after Volusia, three guys got busted for soaking their tires. Devin Moran and Kyle Bronson, they're getting big fat suspensions from the Dirt Car guys. And the biggest one here, of course, is Bobby Pierce, who runs full-time in the World of Outlaw late models. He got busted as well. He'll be out for 4 weeks or four races, I guess, whichever comes first. So they're not really racing a whole lot right now. So all these guys taking big hits. And the big thing, I just mentioned Lucas Oil. They have a policy that if you get caught, you're suspended indefinitely. They have not come down on Devin Moran or Kyle Bronson just yet. But I would imagine that is the letter of the law. So these guys are definitely going to be sitting some races out. They're all going to be running Hunt the Front pretty soon, I have a feeling. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're taking this very seriously. This is also where our DARF of the week comes from. This guy, Jeremy Becker on Twitter, if you're a nice guy, sorry, I'm doing this to you, but he says, suspending three top-tier drivers, not a very good business move. Just drop my Dirt Vision subscription. Pal, nobody has a Dirt Vision subscription. We're all illegally streaming it anyway. We'll see you next week.
Jeremy, if you're listening, I will welcome you to a Racing America subscription.
That's right.
You can launch on short track racing all over North America. Come and find us and sign up.
There are options, but don't soak your tires. Don't touch your tires.
No.
This is a huge, huge statement from World Racing Group, and again, Lucas Oil is going to be forced to kind of follow suit. I still think Bobby Pierce is going to win the championship. He's that good, but in the World of Outlaws, anyway. But
I mean, look, they don't make rules just to make them, right?
No.
So, and when you go out there and break them, they're especially when they make them this year, like, and they really have made a note to enforce them, and you go out there and still do it
first time out.
You better get ready, bud. You better get ready.
Yeah, if there's one thing that the tech shed in short track racing loves to do, it's fucking throw guys out, and so we've just thrown three of the biggest out. We'll see how that goes. Again, I would expect Lucas Oil suspensions to come soon. If anyone out there knows otherwise, hit us up. Let us know. Let me know I'm wrong. But that's all the dirt late model action for this week. It's all legalities and shit. They're not really doing a whole lot of that racing right now until April comes around. Big weekend for guys named Carson. Of course, Carson Lofton winning the smart race at Caraway. Second week in a row for him. Pissing off Tommy Baldwin significantly. Not for anything that Carson did, but he just hates losing. So he's bringing down Doug Kobe for the next race. Where is that at? Is it South Boston, I believe? Yeah, next time Smart Tour races, it's going to be Doug Kobe in the 7NY. So, you know, he means business.
But great to see Tommy at the racetrack, too.
Oh, absolutely. Like, yeah, he's
great to see him around.
Cancer-free, like, out there, yeah, ripping, gritty as always. Love to see that. Yeah. And also Carson Quaffle picking up a big win at Southern National in the Cars Tour. Not a lot of dirt racing going on right now.
That kid just keeps winning,
he's
man.
He's so good. He's so good. Yeah. And, yeah, you expect more out of him in the future, too, for sure. World of Outlaws got rained out. They're going to try again at Cotton Bowl this weekend. We'll see if that actually happens. I got a video from a buddy of the racetrack, and it looked like they were about to run some mud bogging down there. It was hilarious.
Actually, so I'm at my parents' house in outside of Myrtle Beach, and there's actually a dirt track only like 25 miles away from here called Lakeview Motor Speedway, and they're opening this weekend also, but again, the weather looks like shit all weekend, so I don't know if they're actually going to...
Yeah, the tackiest racetrack I've ever seen this past weekend.
Lakeview?
Oh, not Lakeview, no, at Kennedale, which just picked up a date. There was, there's supposed to be, World of Outlaws is going to be racing in Lawton coming up, but there was a flood or a fire or some sort of Oklahoma-esque natural disaster that has damaged that track. So, hate to hear that, but Kennedale will get another shot at having the Outlaws here in a few weeks. And this brings us to the two big short track events of the weekend. Of course, the Pass Tour is kicking off their season down at Hickory for the Easter Bunny 150. And, of course, in South Alabama, we got the Rattler 250. Both of these events can be streamed on Jay's employer, Racing America.
Yeah, that's right. So the Easter Bunny, that's Friday and Saturday. That's for subscribers only. So if you don't have a subscription to Racing America, you can pick that up. You can either do a monthly subscription or an annual subscription. And then we've got 3 days of the Rattler, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Those are pay-per-view events. So you can you can buy them individually per day, or you can do an all-access pass. Subscribers do get a discount on all of our pay-per-views. So if you want a discount on the Rattler, then go ahead and sign up for the subscription. We've got a ton of races. We've got over 200 races throughout the year. We've got lots of cool series. We brought on the Race of Champions this year.
That's right, yeah.
We've got some really cool stuff going on. I know we have some... It looks like some weather may be threatening the Rattler this weekend, but as of today, South Alabama Speedway has a plan in place. So they have, if weather comes through and rains everything out, you know, it'll probably be moved to Monday, but either way, they'll work hard to get that in. It's a great event with a bunch of really cool winners in the past. As much as I would love to go down there, you probably would not see me anywhere within a mile of that victory lane, because when you win, you get covered with about 3 rattlesnakes, live rattlesnakes.
Oh, no thanks. Yeah.
And that is absolutely insane. So I can't remember who it was that won a couple years ago. I think it might have been Noah or somebody like that. And when they won, they didn't want to have anything to do with the rattlesnakes. But yeah, check it out on Racing America this weekend. We've got all kinds of information at racingamerica.com, racingamerica.tv. Go there and get your subscriptions and purchase your pay-per-views. So looks to be a good weekend of racing.
And speaking of the Pass Tour, the entire season is on Racing America, as well as the American Canadian Tour. I go to a lot of those races up here in the Northeast, and you'll be hearing a lot about that. So if you want to know what the fuck I'm talking about during the septic tank, might be worth picking up at least the annual subscription. I think most of those races are covered under that, right?
Yeah. So we have the entire Pass series, ACT series, ROC, APC series, Southern Super Series, Divorce Compact Series, CRA Jags. We added Must See Racing this year, which is some sprint car racing, which is cool. Northwest Super Late Models and the Show Me the Money series. So, and then we've got the full season from a lot of racetracks too. So places like Nashville, Slinger, Mobile, Oxford Plains.
You guys doing all of Thompson or just the Icebreaker?
I think we're doing the Icebreaker and a few others. I don't think we have the full season, but we definitely have the Icebreaker. So looking forward to that.
Hell yeah.
Also, too, before we get to our questions, on the way down here, I once again, the route I take from Cleveland to South Carolina, I always pass right by West Virginia Motor Speedway, and they still have their 2021 schedule on the billboard up front. The track still looks ready to run tomorrow. I hope something happens there this year, because I would love, it's only like 3 hours from Cleveland. I'd love to finally get to see a race there, but still don't have any updates on that track, but just cool to see. I mean, that track looks insane, and I'd love to see some sort of racing there, but
hell yeah.
Still nothing as of yet, unfortunately.
Well, hopefully that tide turns, because I'd love to see that place ripping again. Yep. But yeah, short track season taking a little bit of a breather here after all the nonsense around February where there's like 38 races a night to watch. But things are picking back up again. Cars Tour and Smart all both racing this weekend, and there's a bunch of shit coming down the pipe. So,
yeah, we have a cool event that I gotta promote a little bit. We have the Orange Crush 200 coming up. I think that is March 28th, I believe.
Oh,
and that's being put on by Ward Burton and Jeb Burton. So it is a charity event. This is going to be a pay-per-view event for us. A portion of the pay-per-view proceeds will go to the Ward Burton Foundation, and that is Thursday, March 28th. So some big names jumping in on that, and it'll be the first time Ward's been behind the wheel of a car in a competitive sense in quite some time. So that'll be leading into the Richmond race weekend. So yeah, it should be a good time.
Oh yeah,
cool. Yeah, if Ward's in a car, I'm gonna have to watch that.
Yes,
sure. Right.
So it looks like we had a couple questions this week then, from a couple people. First off, good friend of the show, good friend of all of us, Alex Hammett. He asked, where's Jay? Well, yeah, Jay is right here.
He's here.
On the show.
I finally found myself. Yeah,
he's back.
We had another question from GSXR 103 girl,
on
who had the idea of this podcast, and sick intro, by the way.
Thank you.
Well, Rob is the one who did the intro, so thanks to Rob. I think technically this is my idea, although Rob had also – so I came to Rob initially because Rob and I were in – Jay also. We're all in this fantasy league group, and we all – tend to talk racing shit all week and during the races, and I'd had an idea for some sort of racing podcast probably 2 years prior to this actually happening.
Well, I gotta say real quick, I think True Love actually invited all of us to be part of that group. She's not in the fantasy league anymore, but she is the reason that Brian and I know each other. I know Jay through that. Like, we all know each other because of True Love. So despite the podcast being Brian's idea, we would not be sitting in this combination IHOP Applebee's right now if it was not for Ashley Truelove, who was on the mend. So thanks, Truelove. We love you.
Yeah, thanks.
In coming to Rob, Rob, I know you'd already had your own podcast years ago, and you were thinking about doing one. And again, just clicked. And Ashley, I wanted to bring her in for, a woman's voice, obviously. And she has her own, she has plenty of people that follow her. So I wanted – she's just as much of a fan of all of us. Not just because of her gender, because she knows racing as well as anybody else in our age group, I would say.
Oh,
so,
for sure.
Even though she might not speak up as much as me and Rob, she knows just as much, if not maybe more, than on some subjects than we do. So that's why I wanted her involved. So that answers that question. And the other question we had was, what is your best party story? What's your all-time best party memory for a race? Now, me personally, I think I already kind of mentioned the Four Loko at Daytona incident.
That's your favorite.
I don't have – so this probably sounds sad, if anything. I don't have a ton of, like, great party stories, because I think probably 90% of the races I've gone to have either been with maybe one or two friends or, like, family members.
Yeah.
So – there haven't only the last couple of years I've started to like meet people at the track and do more partying there. So my party stories aren't that great. There was, God, the one was 2018 or 19 600 that I went, the only 600 I went to, I ended up meeting Josh, who's another one of the members of our group, and a few other people, some friends of his, and partied quite a bit there. But I don't really have
Davey
any
Davis
great...
for all my iRacing folks out there.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have too many great partying stories, so I'll leave it up to you two, because I know you two have probably way more partying stories.
Yeah, we've forgotten a few of them, Jay and I have, but...
Yeah, I'm just going to skip over Tulsa. I'm not going to... Yeah. No, I'm not even going to touch that Jay one.
You know, I kind of like with you, Brian, when I go to the racetrack, oftentimes it's by myself. Sometimes I'll just hop in the car on a Saturday if I have nothing to do, and I'll head out to Monadnock, Thompson, wherever the hell I have to go.
Yeah, I do that too.
So
myself,
you know, but I can't get too sideways because I have to drive at least an hour to get back. But the first thing that comes to mind, and it isn't even really a wild one. Shout out to Kyle Armstrong again, a former guest of the show, and I haven't mentioned him on here in probably a couple weeks, and I feel like I always have to mention him because he's one of my best racing buds and just one of my best buds all around. Great dude.
Good dude.
He brought
good
me dude. Out to Eldora last year for the Dream, and again, there was a lot of fun stuff we got into that whole weekend. But my favorite memory, or the one that comes to me first, was it was the afternoon of the actual Dream on Saturday. Our buddy Crabtree, who was a fucking character, I believe I talked about him a little bit on the show when I broke down my visit to Ohio. And he stopped by just kind of not unsolicited. He said he was going to come by and fill our water tank for free, which was super nice. No reason to do that. Just a great dude. And he brought by some jars of moonshine that he had gotten a hold of. Now, I don't think he made it. I don't know where he got it from, but this is the best liquor I've ever drank in my life. And we just kind of stood around, leaning on the tailgate of his truck, shooting the shit, talking racing, talking life, talking music, just whatever. And just a really pure, nice time, you know? And that's like the thing that I take away from going to the racetrack and camping and hanging out. It's not even so much the racing as it's just being around all the people, because you'll meet some good ones when you're out there. And that was a particularly very nice moment for me, just standing in the Ohio sun, drinking some moonshine and just enjoying the company of some like-minded people. So shout out to Kyle, Crabtree, Ken Bob, the whole gang that was there. That was really, really nice. And I can't wait to do that again.
I will say too, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, so the one Bristol dirt race that Ashley and I went to a couple of years ago, that's where I met Jay for the first time, and Jay got us in the pits after the race, which was awesome. But also we ended up sitting in the grandstands with Andy Newsom and Bailey, who I've hung out with a couple of races, and that was a really good time too.
That was a good time.
That was another good
number
one.
Two for me, off the top of my head, just real quick, was definitely standing on the drag strip with you, Jay, at the end of the night and just shooting the shit with my brother-in-law. It was just...
Yeah, that was good.
Quiet racetrack.
Yeah.
Yeah, just chilling out there. There's not a soul in sight, just standing at the end of this 4-wide dragway, just shooting the shit. Just a really like visually striking moment. The weather was nice. It was just really, really sweet.
Yeah, it was really cool. Most of mine happened on the boulevard in Talladega for sure. You know, I was right. So, you know, they like to say what happens in Talladega stays at Talladega, but you know, when in my early years in my career, I had been to Talladega and I had done some wild partying, in the outer campgrounds because, you know, I wasn't really getting paid a whole lot to, cover races. So I knew you could camp for free, across the street from Talladega. So I would do that. So I got the opportunity to write a story for Playboy.com all about Talladega. So I got connected with Russell Branham, who was the PR director of the track at the time. And I'm like, look, man, you got to put me in touch with some guys who really party it up on the boulevard and do it up big. So he introduced me to these guys who called themselves the Dega Dew Club. And so I wrote about them in the Playboy article. But then once that came out, they're like, hey, man, you got to come party with us. So the next race at Talladega, I went and met them, and they were just an awesome group of people. Most of them from Georgia. They had probably about 5 or 6 spots on the boulevard, and every year it just got better and better. I was made an official member of the Dega Dew Club at one point. Got my own shirt and all that. But the way they would do it, a lot of these guys were former law enforcement, and so they had a really keen eye for security and things like that. So because they had bought so many spots on the boulevard, they had it set up really nicely so that they had a fully functioning bar, with 2 bartenders. So they're serving beer, liquor, moonshine, all that stuff. But then they also had a whole separate area that was like VIP only that drivers could come to, you know? So it would be like on a Friday, they would do the big one on the boulevard, you know, at that time, a lot of these guys, you know, they would qualify after the Xfinity race. So literally all they have to do on Saturday is at like 4 o'clock get in the car and take a lap. Right. You know, so there was some really, really good times in there, and I was able to, some hazy nights, make some lifelong connections with people I never really thought I would. But one moment that stands out for sure, I'm not gonna name names, but you're probably gonna be able to figure it out. But I was there one night, you know, drinks deep, moonshine deep, with a certain four-time cup champ, and telling him this story about the first time I had met him, and we're like arm in arm. Right. And I'm telling him how I was 9 years old, 1993, at Watkins Glen. And I see him over there and I'm like, Mom, that's so-and-so. And she's like, no, that's not him. That's not him. You know, he has a mustache. And as I say that, he looks at me and he goes, now you've got the mustache. And it just like blew my mind, like absolutely blew my mind. And I don't remember a whole lot after that. I remember calling my mother at God knows what time and leaving a drunken voicemail about it. And I was sleeping in a tent in the infield, not on the boulevard, but I was working that weekend. And so I have to go cover an Xfinity race and qualifying and write stories and do all this shit. And I wake up in the morning and my hat is missing. I smoke a pipe. My pipe is broken in half. I am missing my cooler that I've had since like 1990 that has stickers all over it.
I've seen all this.
And I have no idea where any of this stuff is. And come to find out, I was walking down the boulevard and let's just say I fell asleep standing up and hit the ground hard and just took off running back to my, I don't know how I found my tent, but found my tent, and the rest of the weekend was pretty kosher after that. But yeah, that's probably my top story from there. But there's a lot of them from Talladega that we'll have to share a drink over one time.
Hell yeah.
Not tell them on air.
So, great question. That's from Chanset 23 on Instagram. Usually I'll get on Instagram and before we record these, and do you have any questions for us? Just fire us those questions through the little prompt they'll put up on our stories. If there's anything you want us to talk about, anything you have questions about, blah, blah, blah. Great question. And a little tip for those of you who go to the racetrack and maybe you decide to camp. If you find the party lot, oftentimes you will run into drivers, team members, media members. Like, people just kind of hang out. And I don't know if there's any other sport in the world that's quite like that.
Right. And just be yourselves, man. Like, they're people just like you are. Right. I've had to kick some drivers out of the Digga Dude Club before, and you know, be like, "Hey, man, you need to go because these people want to beat your ass." So, just be yourselves, and they'll be the same. And I've been camping at the racetrack since probably about 1991, 1992, and even when I worked in the sport and had a free hotel from my company, I'd still stay at the track. So it's something I absolutely love.
Yeah, cannot recommend camping at the track more. I can't. Yeah. It's so fun.
And you'll meet lifelong friends. I mean, there's people I met years ago just because we just happened to be, you know, neighbors for the weekend, and we're still friends and we still stay in touch. I will say one of my favorite Talladega, I was sleeping in my car one weekend because I didn't even take a tent or anything. I think it was the first weekend I went to go cover a race down there. So this might've been like 2008, 2009 or something. And so I like open the back door in the morning and this guy has a fire going on the ground. He's cooking giant ass pork chops. He looks at me like stumbling out of this car, not being drunk, but just because I've slept in the back of a car.
Slept in a Camry, yeah.
He just looks at me and he's like, want a pork chop? And it's just like, that's life, right? In the NASCAR campground, right?
That
like,
really does sum it up right there. Yeah.
100%, man. So definitely can't recommend that enough.
Yeah. By the way, if anyone is going to be going to Loudon this year, me and the boys will be there in the X lot or the N1 lot, whatever the fuck they call it now. So be sure to come track us down.
There you go.
Maybe we'll get Brian up for that.
We'll see. When is it this year?
It's June 24th, I think, is the cup race. Whatever that's weekend surrounding that is when we'll be
there.
That's
a little bit better schedule-wise for me this year than it has been in the past.
So, and it won't be as fucking hot. Usually it's like...
Yeah, June 23rd.
Yeah, 6,000 degrees at Loudon during July, so the humidity won't quite have kicked in, so it should be a nice time.
Yeah. And Christopher Bell will probably spank the shit out of him again.
That's a fact.
And now I guess it's our regular video of the week segment. And with NASCAR going to Bristol this coming weekend, I decided to pick the it's weird to call this an infamous race because after watching the whole thing, I feel like it gets a little bit of a bad rap with the wreck at the very end. But the
2010 Bristol Legends race. Now, they did this twice. They picked 12 different drivers, and they put them in at the time. I guess they were Hooters Pro Cup late models. A lot of them were painted up like drivers' past cars and stuff, and it was a pretty star-studded field. Let me pull up my list here of who was in it. I mean, obviously, we had both David and Larry Pearson in the race. It wasn't until I actually watched this whole thing that I saw that David was in it, which is fucking insane.
It is insane.
Kyle Yarborough was in it.
Again, you got the Pearsons, you've got Kyle Yarborough, you've got Dave Marcus, Rick Wilson, JD or LD Ottinger. Let's see here. Where's my list here? Jack Ingram, Tommy Houston, Jimmy Hensley.
Was out there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty star-studded lineup, and, you know, ESPN did their old-school graphics. You had Alan Bestwick and Dale Jarrett and Rusty Wallace in the booth. Junior Johnson was driving the pace car.
I think Marty Reed was in the booth. Yeah.
No, Alan Bestwick was there somewhere, right?
He was in the infield. And Dr. Jerry Punch were in the infield, and then Marty Reed, Dale Jarrett, and Rusty were in the booth, yeah.
There you go. It's just really completely star-studded, and it's like, if this 2010 was right when I was getting back into NASCAR, and it's like, if I knew this race was happening, I would have been there.
Yeah.
Then I would have been there tomorrow. Like, this is such a cool event.
I was there.
There you go. Jay is going to say, one of the other nice things about picking this race was once we had Jay invited on the show, he's like, oh, I was there. You've got a story. So we'll get to that in a second, but so the race itself, again, it was only 35 laps. It wasn't very long. Beginning of the race, we get an in-car interview with David Pearson, and David was very confused by the pedal configuration in these cars. He was like, I got to figure all this shit out. He just didn't. He's like, I don't know how to brake with my left foot. I don't know how to do how to shift all this. It was very interesting to see a 75-year-old David Pearson confused but still out there running with these guys.
Yeah.
Because they didn't prepare these cars. Bristol Motor Speedway prepared these cars, and the Hooters Pro Cup teams prepared these cars, and these guys just got in. And the first time they got in, it was literally like minutes before the race. They gave them some hot laps, and because this happened after the Xfinity race. So they'd already run a race. There was no practice beforehand, and they're just like, Let it rip, bud.
there's another interview with Kyle Yarborough, and he took zero preparation for this. None. He just got in the car. He's like, maybe tomorrow I might have wished I had prepared a bit more, but he didn't give a shit at the moment. Also, none of these drivers had driven on the concrete setup. All of them were racing when it was still asphalt at Bristol. Yep. So none of them have driven this track. And it was only 35 laps, not very long. The beginning of the race, they tried to do the World of Outlaws four-wide salute and just did a piss-poor job. Like, it was
it
just
took about three
awful.
Laps for him to do it.
Yeah. Guys couldn't figure that out at all. Right off the bat, at the beginning of the race, LD Ottinger took a pretty strong lead. I also didn't mention Harry Gant also in this race. Harry Gant and Rick Wilson were very early trading the lead. There were only 12 cars in the race, and a few guys like Marcus was out early. Kyle Yarborough's car shit the bed early. Very quickly, there was a lot of attrition in the race, not due to wrecks or anything. I'm trying to think. Jay, let's talk about
Charlie Glotzback. He hit the wall to bring out a caution. That's kind of what set up the end of the race.
Yeah.
Before we get to the end of the race, because there's not a whole lot to talk about here. So you told me that you had a story, because again, you were up in the press booth. Tell us about your experience at this race, because I feel like that's more to talk about than what actually happened.
Yeah. So to be honest with you, I can't even remember who I wrote for at this time. It might have been Front Stretch. It could have been allleftturns.com. God knows who it was. This was really before I was paid to do this full time, even though I was doing it full time. So, we had covered the Xfinity race. I think Justin Allgaier had won that race. And interestingly enough, they actually, the Legends drivers were paired up with different Xfinity drivers so that their finishing order in the Xfinity race determined their starting order in this Legends race, which was just crazy.
Very quickly, we do also see a baby Justin Allgaier talking about his win later on in the broadcast, because he was in the pits and he had just won that day, and he was looking very young. This was 14 years ago, but Jake.
Yeah, so I was up in the press box, because I mean, a lot of races, I like to cover a race from the infield just in case anything happens. You know, you can scramble from the media center and go interview drivers or do what you need to do, right? But Bristol is a track where I love to watch from the press box, just because you can see everything. You're not relying on the TV coverage, all that stuff. And it's probably one of the best seats in all of sports. The press box at Bristol is in the corner, in the middle of turns 3 and 4 in the suites. So very high up. And so, to be honest with you, I wasn't even really paying attention to this race as it was going on. I was writing up my story for, you know, the Xfinity race, or, you know, working on some stuff for Sunday in advance of the Cup race. And I just heard and felt the impact, right? So when Larry Pearson spins around, I don't know if he has a tire go out or whatever, you know, but he spins around in the middle of 1 and 2, he hits the wall pretty hard driver's side, and then the car, you know, slides down the racetrack kind of nose first, and then Charlie Glotzback, I mean, just plows into him, probably going about full speed.
Real bad,
It was a bad, bad deal. And I could physically feel like the boof all the way across the track in the press box, and it was just like everything stopped.
That's such a nasty feeling when you do experience that, when somebody hits the fence so hard. And it reverberates through in a place as big as Bristol. I can't even imagine what that's like when you're inside too.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, there have been some incredibly gnarly wrecks at Bristol. I mean, obviously we all know Michael Waltrip, and even our favorite Mike Harmon had a very similar wreck to Michael Waltrip. But this was another one of those. I would put that up there, one of the worst wrecks ever.
Yeah, because I think when you freeze frame it, how deep Charlie Glotzback's car got into the cockpit of Larry Pearson's car, right at his legs and right in the driver door. I mean, it was shocking that anybody could get out of that, you know, but the two cars, they come down, they hit the inside wall on the backstretch. And as soon as they hit the wall, there are people running from the pits to the pit wall. You know, which is something you don't ever see. Right.
Yeah, right.
The interesting thing in this clip though, is, this happens, but as you watch, there are a couple guys standing there. They don't know what to fucking do. Like they're waiting for a second for the safety truck to get there, because again, as a fan, a crew guy or whatever, it's like, who knows? Like we all just saw this insane wreck and dude could be dead. It's like, do you want to go over there and see what's in there?
And let's not forget, Charlie Glotzback was like 70 something years old at this point, right? So these are like spring chickens, right? Yeah.
They show his car too, and it's like the whole front end of his car is gone.
Because he was literally firewall deep into Pearson's car. So
that could have killed him too, you know?
Yeah, 100%. So, you know, I'm pretty sure they brought like a sheet out to cut Larry out of the car. I can't remember that or not.
I don't know. In the broadcast, they didn't. I mean, it was very clearly, it was, you know, the track was dead. They cut to Jerry Punch on the ground, and you can just see everybody on the pit wall just staring at it. It's dead silent. in saying that though, you know, part of the reason why I chose this race is because I knew this wreck had happened, and I'd only really seen this wreck and maybe a tiny bit of the aftermath. But one thing that maybe some of the YouTube clickbaity videos that document this don't really talk about, the fact that Larry was actually, he was hurt, he had to go to the hospital, but he was okay. He was conscious. He got out of the car. Yeah. Like he was obviously not fine, but he was not nearly as badly injured as one would think, you know, with
I think Charlie was knocked unconscious at first. And so why everybody panicked when they first got to his car. Because if you notice, the people who went to Larry's car, they were the ones who were kind of standing there. But the people who went to Charlie's car, they were the first ones to start calling over the paramedics and the EMTs. And then his car was on fire as well. They did have to cut Larry out of the car. I think they were just being careful of his back and all of that.
Yeah.
My funny part of this story, if there can be a funny part of this story. So I'm in the press box, right? We're all just like, what the fuck just happened? Like, oh my God. Right. And there's a writer who is still out there today. You guys might be blocked by him. I'm not going to say what his name is.
Or no, that is.
Yeah, I got an idea. Yeah.
You know, he was writing for a very prominent newspaper at the time. And I'm sitting there like trying to figure out what's going on. And he gets on, picks up the phone, calls, I'm assuming his editor, and goes, "Motherfucker, I got another story I gotta write. I think Larry Pearson just died." Just like, Jeez. What the fuck, man? Like, have some like sympathy or something, right? So it was like a major inconvenience to him that he had to write another story. I'm sure he was late to a dinner or something like that, but it was just like, oh my god, dude. Like, I mean, there's these two guys, they haven't even got them out of their cars yet, and you're like, have some sympathy here. But
I've got the video up right now as they're loading the cars onto the wreckers and Glotzbach's car. It looks kind of similar to what not quite as reduced in size as Austin Dillon's was at Daytona when he got into the fence, but the front of that car looks just about the same with the engine still attached. It's fucking nuts.
These guys are
Larry Pearson's car is just broken completely.
And like, these guys were ripping like 16, 17 second laps. They were going like 150, an average about like 117 to 120 miles an hour around Bristol Motor Speedway.
Yeah, they weren't creeping around. There's no question about that. Yeah.
And Charlie would, I don't know, they didn't have spotters. I can guarantee you that. And, you know, I know Charlie had already hit the wall. So I don't know if his car wasn't working, you know, wouldn't get slowed down in time, or if he just, you know,
it's a damn left foot.
Reaction time of a 70-year-old man, right?
Damn left foot breaking, you know. It's just
exactly. So, but I remember seeing that, watching everybody run the pit wall, and just being terrified that something, I was going to have to cover somebody getting killed. But luckily, that didn't happen.
Again, going back to the initial clickbait YouTube videos I'd first watch, you kind of get the impression that this race was completely over after this happened, but nope, it did. It was not the case. They ended up obviously red flagging the race and cleaning everything up, but there was still five laps to go, and there was actually a pretty decent battle between Rick Wilson and Phil Parsons for the win, and Rick Wilson ended up taking the victory. I should also say too that David Pearson, he didn't get back in the car. He was already having, I think he got in the wall, and after, you know, seeing his son almost get killed, he ended up going to the hospital, which is, you know, pretty smart call. I mean, why the fuck get back in the car after that happens? Yeah. Oh, I should also say too, not only was Junior Johnson driving the pace car, Bobby Allison waved the green flag too. So again, legends everywhere for this fucking race.
Dave Marcus was in this in his wingtips.
Yep.
Of course, Dave Marcus was in it.
Harry Gant was not wearing any gloves.
Insane, man.
But yeah, only six cars finished the race, and after the battle, you know, you get a cool interview with Rick Wilson after, and I hope they do this again next year. Well, sorry, bud, this was it.
Nope.
They did not fuck with this ever again after the fact.
They did something similar to this at Charlotte Motor Speedway, I think, in the early 90s, where they ran
Legends car. Yes, Legends Elmer Langley won. Yep.
Yep, there's some good footage of that. That might be a good one for another day.
Yeah.
So it was a cool race. You know, again, maybe a little bit of a more ominous video than we normally cover. But again, Larry's still with us. I don't know if Charlie's got to be pretty old if he's still alive. I don't know if he's still with us, but he didn't die in this wreck, so
no.
That was good. So yeah, cool race. You know, I don't know. We're in a weird spot now where a lot of these older guys that retired in their 40s and early 50s are starting to get back into different cars, and I don't know if we'll ever see this type of event ever again. Probably not, but it'd be cool. I mean, there's plenty of guys out there that still are competitive. I know one thing we didn't mention earlier, like Bobby Labonte, he's back with Joe Gibbs Racing in an ambassador role, and he's still out there racing modifieds every week, so I wouldn't be shocked to see him get in an Xfinity car at some point. That'd be really cool.
And we got Ward Burton coming up in the Orange Crush 200.
That's right.
I mean, Sterling Marlin, he was out there racing, you know, a good bit out in Tennessee last year. And
Sterling was racing last year?
I'm pretty sure.
Fighting through Parkinson's,
Are you sure?
He's definitely dialed it way back.
He's dialed it back, but within the last 2 years, Sterling was racing for sure.
Yeah. See, if he can, he will. And that's a testament to how tough these old
I just remember at the Nashville race, the Nashville SRX race that Ashley and I went to, we were sitting behind some older guys, and they were like Nashville locals, and we were talking about Sterling in particular, and they were like, "Yeah, man, he is not in any shape to get in a car." This was 3 years ago. I have to look up, but man, he's, I don't know if we'll ever see him in a car again. He's in real bad shape.
Yeah.
He's, but again, if he can, he will do it. Yeah. Until
I would love to, yeah. But yeah, it's,
yeah, Jeremy Mayfield, like he'll run a lot of the I think he was running some of the ASA Stars races. He'll be in the Orange Crush 200 as well. But yeah, I think if we see this again, it won't be something like this. You know, I think it'll be, you know, a Cars Tour race or something, or something like that, where you have, or you know, you put him into some Cars Tour cars or some prolate models or whatever at North Wilkesboro for All-Star Weekend. You know, yeah. I think doing it Bristol is probably out of the question.
Yeah.
And it probably wasn't the greatest idea. But I could see something like this happening with guys like Bobby and Jeremy. I don't think Jeremy would be welcomed back, but you know, I don't see why Rusty Wallace couldn't get in the car or anything like that. So I'd love to see Rusty get back in a car.
But, oh my God, it'd be amazing. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Kenny Wallace would do it. There's no question about it.
That's right.
Oh yeah. No doubt about it.
Shout out to Kenny Wallace. Yeah. You can also watch Kenny Conversations on RacingAmerica.tv.
Oh, that's right. Forgot about that.
I like it. Thank you.
So I've been on the road and very busy the last couple of days. So I do not have a video of the week next week, but I will probably get something together in the next couple of days once I'm back home. So check this weekend. I'll have something posted and I'll put it on our social media pages and we'll talk about it next week.
Sweet.
Sorry for not being prepared, but very busy week for me. So
how dare you?
Right.
Sorry. But
going to Alex's hometown after this weekend, right? We're going to Austin for some lefts and rights.
Oh, how about that? That's gonna be exciting.
I don't have anything. I'm not gonna bring up any CODA footage for the video week. I can promise you that.
No.
So what's up next for you, Jay? I know you. I guess you're going to CODA. That's awesome. You got any more races you're going to? Anything you want to talk about?
No, I'm actually not going to CODA. I don't know the next race I'm going to. I've kind of moved more into a marketing role with Racing America than an editorial role. So just more behind the scenes stuff.
Gotcha.
Probably see me at some more short track races and things like that. So
very cool.
Yeah, just kind of plugging along and enjoying not being on the road 36 weekends out of the year.
Yeah, it's gotta be nice, right?
It is. I definitely miss the grind and miss a lot of the guys and gals in the garage and media centers and all that, but it is nice to know what a weekend is. And it's a crazy concept. So just kind of plugging along and just living life, trying to stay out of trouble.
Oh yeah,
there you go. Well, that pretty much brings it to the end this week for a trip to Applebee's. You know, again, we'll be in CODA next weekend. Bristol's this weekend. Who knows if we'll actually get racing in on Sunday, because I heard the weather's supposed to be shitty this weekend. But
yep.
We'll see what happens.
Classic.
But as always, you can follow us at Meet Me at Applebee's on Instagram. Meet Me at the Bees on Twitter. I am Speedway Screens on all the things and SpeedwayTSJ.etsy.com. And Jay, actually, again, he's plugged himself many, many times throughout the show, the exact opposite of Miss True Love. But yep. Jay, any final plugs you want to give before we head on out of here?
Just follow me on Twitter at JW Pennell. So JAYWPENNELL. That's pretty much where I put all my stuff. So. Thanks for having me on. Every time I come on here, it's a hell of a time, and I enjoy shooting the shit with y'all. And hopefully we can get True Love back on here and all healed up here soon.
Well, it should be next week in case we can't get her back. I'm sure we'll figure something else out. Rob_Motes_unofficial on Instagram. My band is called These Wild Plains. We are hitting the road. It's finally here, folks. This Saturday, I'll be down in Philly. Baby's First Rodeo. It's These Wild Plains and Charlie Maria. I'm playing drums all night. So if you like watching me play drums, you're in fucking luck, because I got a lot of it to do. So I'll be very sober for the first 3 hours of the night, and then I'll have to play catch up once I've clocked out, or maybe the last half of the V's Wild Plains set start sending shots up to me. That's at Baby's First Rodeo at Ortlieb's in Philly this Saturday, March 16th. We'll be at the Galactic Theater in Warren on March 17th. That's this Sunday. Maybe we'll find some bar that has a television that won't put on like some Bruins pregame show or some shit. We can watch the race on there if it happens. And then March 19th on Tuesday, I'll be at Skinny Dennis in Brooklyn. So that's a great little honky tonk. Again, all these shows are These Wild Plains and Charlie Marie. There's some more shows coming up, but we'll have a new show up by the time those happen. But I do want to shout out Charlotte will be there next Thursday. Not this coming Thursday, but next.
Oh, I was going to say, okay, that totally, like, yes, I thought it was this Thursday.
No, next Thursday.
Next week,
yeah.
Next week.
Yeah, March 21st we'll be at the Thirsty Beaver, and then I'm sure we'll be talking about that on whatever show happens after that. But
you come hang out with Rob and I. I'll be there for that.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, yeah, really looking forward to seeing everybody. And again, thank you so much for coming on, Jay. We really appreciate you.
I do got to give one more shout. If you're looking for a book on NASCAR history, you can go ahead and buy my book. It's called Start Your Engines, Famous First in the History of NASCAR. You can find that link in my Twitter bio or just search for it on Amazon. Came out with a new update last year, so I think I've got like 5 or 6 new chapters and some updates all throughout. So just chronicling all kinds of famous firsts throughout the history of the sport. And yeah, it's pretty good, easy read.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Well, folks, thank you once again for joining us at Applebee's. Looks like our check is here. So
I'm going to send that to Michael Annette. Can we do that?
Yeah, Michael Annette will pick up the tab.
he'll pay for it? Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, he's got it, yeah.
There you go, cool. So we'll talk to y'all next week. Take it easy.